Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
The Bob Seska Show.
Bob Seska.
Hello, Seska. You're looking radiantly maternal.
The Bob Seska Show.
From our nation's capital, it is Wednesday, August 31, 2022, and this is the Bob Seska Interview on the Sexy Liberal Podcast Network. Hi, I'm Bob.
Hello, Bob.
Hi, day 587 of the Biden-Harris administration, 69 days until the 22 midterms. I'm on Instagram. My handle is TheBobSeska, Twitter, BobSeska_go, and our Patreon is BobSeskaShow.com. So Kevin Johnson returns to the show today. You might know him as Sam Dermody from Ozark or young Victor Creel from the latest season of Stranger Things, or as Joel in Tales of the Walking Dead, or Eric in the forthcoming series Florida Man. Kevin was here a few months ago, but we didn't have enough time to dig into politics at all. So today, we'll mostly talk about the latest from the grand jury investigation into Trump's document theft, plus a little bit about living with family members who happen to be Trump supporters, and a whole lot more. Kevin's going to be appearing at the Spookula Holiday Spooktacular on December 17th and 18th in Ocala, Florida. You can follow him on Twitter at Kevin_L_Johnson, on Instagram at Kevin L. Johnson. Links in the description for all of that crap. Meantime, if you dig what you hear today, don't forget to sign up for our bonus content at BobSeskaShow.com. Okay, here's me and Kevin. This is a fun talk.
More fun, more music, the Bob Seska Show.
I got to ask you right off the bat, are you anywhere near like a series or a movie set at the moment? Are you in a trailer or are you just at home?
Just at home, my man. Waiting on that call.
Are you kidding me? I mean, like, you've been in everything. The entire streaming community should be lining up to hire you, given your track record so far.
I appreciate that. I'm talking to my manager later today. He's got to talk me off the ledge kind of deal. I mean, it happens in the business, you know.
With streaming, though, is there like a pilot season where it's sort of like back in the old days when there was a certain point in the year, usually I think like late spring or something like that, where everyone would get lined up, if they didn't live in L.A., they'd fly out to L.A. to be available for auditions and so on. Does that still happen, or is that kind of a thing of the past?
I feel like it's been ever since I've been in the business, like late 2008, because once Netflix came out, once they started doing their own content, then everybody else started coming out with things, which is great for all the actors. I mean, it's, more content means more possibilities, more opportunities. But yeah, the whole idea of going out to LA during quote pilot season, I don't know. I just don't think it's the same anymore.
Well, last time you were here, we talked a lot about Ozark and what would happen to your character in the final season. But now that we know what happened to Sam and Marty and Wendy, et cetera, Sam ends up being born again and baptized in a hotel pool. It was surprising because I think the last time we were talking, we were like, okay, how is Sam going to die brutally in this season? And it turns out just the opposite. You end up getting baptized. It was kind of a nice redemption for your character after so much chaos and turmoil. Were you happy with the way everything ended up?
Yeah, I thought that was an interesting way for Sam's character to kind of end on the show. But some people, you know, like, was he brainwashed into you know, he joined a cult kind of. So yeah, I mean, you can look at it that way too.
Uh-huh. Definitely. And the cult was, at least in that context, being run by Richard Thomas, which that had to have been intense working with Richard Thomas. I mean, the guy acted with Paul Newman back in the day. So were you at all intimidated going into scenes with him?
I think we only had like one scene together and I don't think actually we actually said anything back and forth.
Well, that makes it easier. Yeah.
he was such a nice dude, like the nicest guy.
Yeah.
Offset, like striking up conversations and just, I'm like, man, I'm talking to, I mean, I know him from It back in the day. So, I was a huge fan of that, you know, the television version. And I just remember that movie and I was like, man, I'm talking to the guy from It, man, this is amazing. And he was such a nice guy. On my last day, I was asking him and Laura, like, what do I say? You know, how do I say my goodbyes and thank yous? Do I, you know, make sure not to leave people out?
Mm-hmm.
And they're like, whatever you say is going to be completely fine.
Right.
So, and I posted that on Instagram like months later, cause somebody taped it. That was a wild ride, man. It was a lot of fun.
Did you feel like that character arc made sense to wind up there after all of the turmoil he went through from watching his mom get violently run over by a truck or whatever that was, on through laundering money for the birds, and then finally he ends up at the Lazy O and gets baptized? I mean, was that, did you feel as though that was a justified conclusion for Sam's character?
Yeah, I thought it was the writers are amazing. So I thought a funny, heartwarming, you know, depending on how you look at it, kind of way for a character to end.
And you had easily the funniest scene in the entire run of Ozark. And of course, I'm talking about the paella scene where you're talking to that celebrity chef.
Hey, can I ask you a personal question?
Sure, why not?
Do you make paella?
I'm sorry?
See, I tried to make paella for my ex-fiance, and she told me that it didn't taste authentic. So I figured, since, you know, you're right here in front of me, and you never know if you're gonna get back together with someone, that you might...
What are we talking about? Well, chicken?
Mm-hmm.
Sausage?
Yeah.
Shrimp?
Yep.
Calamari?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, maybe some chicken stock.
Ooh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Tomatoes?
Mm-hmm.
Onions?
Exactly, yeah.
Garlic?
Yep.
Mussels?
Uh-huh.
Yeah. You're fucking smothering it, man.
Wow. Thank you for that.
Yeah.
It was fucking hysterical.
Thank you. Eric Layden was hilarious to get to work with. And it was so funny because the last thing he says is, you're smothering it. You know, and it's
so
kind
obvious.
Of like, yeah, and it's also kind of like, was I smothering her?
If you haven't seen it, go to season 4. I think it's episode 4 of Ozark. I think it's been listed on a number of different websites as being one of the funniest scenes from the series. And we don't normally think of Ozark for its comedy. Huh. Yeah, I know Screen Rant in particular ranked, I think it was number 3 on the list. There was a scene with like Marty in the funeral home talking about a casket. And then there was the scene with the paella, which was so perfect. Because I remember after we watched it, I sent you a DM and congratulated you on absolutely the funniest scene of the series. So, but you know what? I'm ashamed to say we haven't started watching Stranger Things yet. I'm talking from the very beginning.
Ooh.
We haven't caught that bandwagon, and we definitely intend to. I mean, it's absolutely on our list. I wanted to ask you about playing young Victor Creel in the most recent season. I mean, how mind-blowing was it to occupy a character played by Robert Englund in the series?
Oh, that was, yeah, that was a lot of fun. Like, I didn't know who I was playing a younger version of.
While you were shooting?
No, I knew after that. It was like when we were doing, before I went in for my fitting, I had no idea who I was playing a younger version of. And because when I got the breakdown, it said they were looking for a young Bill Maher. And I was like, okay.
That's weird.
So they're so secretive that they didn't want to say a young Robert Englund. So they said, who's similar to Robert Englund, maybe at a younger age? And they thought maybe Bill Maher. So, and I looked at them both and I was like, maybe. Yeah. Like, okay. I could see that. So I called my manager. I was like, do I look like a young Bill Maher? I mean, is Bill Maher going to be in Stranger Things?
this is so weird.
And I was like, what?
Oh my God. So,
yeah, that was a trip. But when I found out that Robert Englund was in it, I was like, oh, that makes perfect sense.
Yeah, yeah. But did you prepare to sort of project kind of a Bill Maher vibe when you went in to audition? Was that it? Or did they let you off the hook at some point prior to going in?
Well, I think they were just like visually, they were looking for a Bill Maher.
Oh, okay, I see.
Is what it said. So I've kind of got like a big, I guess, my nose is somewhat big, maybe, and Bill Maher has a big nose. I don't know about that, but yeah.
So I had
people like that. They were telling me that I was given like a Patrick Wilson kind of vibe, which I was cool with that. I mean, oh, he's a good actor.
Yeah, absolutely.
I was like, okay.
Yeah,
Patrick
perfect.
All right, I'll take that. Yeah.
Yeah, you definitely have that. Now that I think about it, Patrick Wilson's a good comparison. In fact, you guys could play like brothers or something like that in a show. Yeah, that would work.
I'm down for that.
Yeah, totally. Well, you know, last time we didn't have much time to talk politics because I had like a gazillion questions about Ozark for you and your career and so on. So today we're going to fix all of that, Kevin. It's your turn to vent.
Let's do it.
Yeah, yeah. So first of all, when you travel to a set to shoot a show or a film or something like that, do you bring all your classified documents with you or do you leave those at home?
I make sure to lock them up.
In the basement.
My trailer, you know, make sure the PAs don't see them. Dude, what a slow news week, huh?
Yeah, it's
Wednesday.
It's been great. It's actually been one of those things where for whatever it was, 7 years, we were dealing with what I've been calling the fire hose of news. And they were, it was all bad news. It was all terrifying news where I think we were all waking up in the morning going, okay, what's it going to be today? Are we going to see a mushroom cloud? Is he going to fire off nuclear weapons? I mean, that's what I was thinking throughout that 7 years. And finally, we get to 2022. It's one thing after another. It seems like every day there's another bit of at least promising news.
Yeah.
We can at least start there.
Dude, like Joe Biden has done so much, you know, and it's just, I think it's finally starting to get recognized. I mean, the infrastructure bill, the one he just passed, the recent one that was
The Inflation Reduction Act.
The Republicans are fascist. I mean, it is what it is. Like, we just got to call it.
They're semi-fascist.
Oh, I'm sorry. Joe was like semi-fascist. Yes. Like, I love how he only said he put semi.
Yeah.
Like, I was like, come on, Joe. We know.
Are you enjoying the garment rending over semi-fascist? Just like the whiny diaper babies who have spent the last, you know, I don't know how many, at least a couple of decades accusing Democrats of being communists, certainly of being baby killers. We're apparently, Kevin, we're waiting for babies to be born so we can murder them in their cribs. But we've been accused of that numerous times.
Yeah, a nine-month abortion or something.
Yeah. And I think last time you mentioned you have MAGA relatives. Am I remembering that correctly? Is that true?
My dad, you know, I love him, but he's on the right. I don't think, now he didn't he's voted Democratic in the past.
Mm-hmm.
Like I think it was maybe Jimmy Carter that he voted for.
Interesting.
But like I was on the phone with him, or I called him, I think late last week. And what did he brought up something about, I didn't even say anything. And he brought up politics. And I was like, Dad, I'm calling to say hi. I can't even. Oh, he said, what do you think about your side of the aisle wanting to let everybody out of jail? And I was like, what?
Wait, what?
What are you talking about? God. He's like, yeah. Didn't you hear this? I was like, Dad, please no. I'm driving right now. We can't have this conversation.
Is that typically how you handle it? Because I know one of the reasons I ask is I think we all have relatives, close family members, certainly in some cases, old friends. And so I'm always curious how people handle that conflict. I know for me, I just don't even go there. I don't even bring it up. We don't talk about it. We just, that whole side. I mean, in fact, my entire career, it's one of those things where I just don't bring it up if it's in mixed company. Certainly if I know someone agrees with me, then that's kind of safe territory. But when it comes to family members, it's really challenging, isn't it?
It's difficult because, like, in the past, I couldn't really talk politics because, I mean, not that I know, you know, I'm a whiz at it, like, you and Stephanie Miller and Tom Hartman. I listen to all y'all. But I've learned a lot more in the last couple of years. I think, well, thanks to Trump, you know, you got to learn. And that's why I wouldn't talk politics with him. But now that I know more about it, I feel more confident that I can chat with him. But then he doesn't want to do it. Mm-hmm. But then when we're driving sometimes, like, he'll bring it up and I'm like, Dad, what are you doing? You don't want to talk. I know you don't want to talk politics. he's like, it's like he's goading me and I love him to death. But I mean, you know, it can get frustrating because Republicans, they had this idea of the great, like the American dream. It's like, hey, you know what? We should have lower taxes for rich people because someday you're going to be rich and you're going to want those breaks.
It's so strange. The aspirational aspect of that is bizarre to me. It's like, yeah, we want these tax breaks just in case we win the lottery or just in case there's this giant windfall in our lives. And therefore, you know, the first thing top of mind in that circumstance is, gee, I hope I don't have to pay a lot in taxes. It's like the last thing you're thinking about.
It's insane. And I mean, the Democratic Party has always been for the working man, woman, person, you know, I don't understand how they get people. Well, I mean, we've talked about this. I mean, they get people to vote for them because with wedge issues like culture wars.
Yeah.
I just believe that these big, you know, corporations like the oil, big pharma, like they could care less about culture wars, but they're like, well, how do we get people to vote for the side that we need them to vote for? Because we don't want to help. We don't want to help them. We don't want to, you know, make their lives better. But how can we make them vote for us? I know, we'll get them to hate the black guy, the brown person, you know, like we'll get the fight going on. And it's just like that, that meme that I showed you, you know, with the business guy and you got the two workers on each side and there's one cookie in the middle and the business guy's got a shit ton of cookies with him. And he leans over to one of the workers and he's like, hey, you see that worker over there? He wants to steal your cookie. Like what? Like that's right. It's like, hey, don't pay attention to the man behind the curtain.
Okay, back with Kevin Johnson here in just one second. But first, let's talk about the after party. Every Friday, Kimberly Johnson and I record a fourth Bob Seska Show podcast for the week. And by the way, Kimberly Johnson, Kevin Johnson, no relation. But this podcast is totally different from the usual Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday shows. The Friday after party podcast is loaded with all the politics you want, while also including uncensored, completely obscene conversations about sex, drugs, movies, television, our personal lives, all the crap we can't get away with on the free show. So please help support this podcast by subscribing to our Friday After Party for just $10 per month. And bonus, you're also going to get two Shadow Docket shows every week included in that level of support. That's BobSeskaShow.com or just click the all caps Patreon link beneath the logo at BobSeska.com. Thank you.
CarMax is putting peace of mind back in car shopping by putting you in the driver's seat to find a ride that's right for you. Because at CarMax, we believe you shouldn't just settle for a car. you should love your car. That's why every car we sell is CarMax certified quality, so you can be sure with upfront pricing that's the same for every customer. So don't settle. Find love at first drive and start shopping now at CarMax.com. CarMax, the way car buying should be.
What makes a life a good one? Is it the adventure you have? Or the friends you find along the way? Maybe it's pursuing your passion while striving to protect, defend, and save what you believe in every single day. So, what makes a life a good one? In the Coast Guard, we think it's all of the above and more. But you'll have to find out for yourself. Visit GoCoastGuard.com to learn more.
Bob Seska!
All-time favorites all day long!
Are you living in Georgia now? Is that where you are now?
Yeah, I've been living in Georgia since like late 2015.
So I'm sure you've got Herschel Walker fever.
There's no way he's going to debate Raphael Warnock. It would just be an absolute train wreck. And I just don't.
Yeah.
Do you think they're going to debate? You know, I just don't. I don't see how. I feel like his people are going to be like, no, man, we got to avoid this.
Yeah. I mean,
you're sort of in the polls still. Like, let's not jinx it kind of thing.
Mm-hmm, right. And honestly, I don't care if they debate or not. Usually these debates are just meaningless and there's never a clear, quote unquote, winner of the debate. And it just ends up being a show. And yeah, I'm more concerned about Herschel Walker delivering floor speeches on the floor of the United States Senate. That's my bigger concern because that's going to be bad.
We got Tommy Tuberville there right now. That's what worries me. But then also Alabama is really, really red and George is not. So I still think that Warnock is going to win. I see how Stacey Abrams can lose.
So, last night we got the DOJ's response to Trump's special master lawsuit in this Mar-a-Lago case. Do you think we finally got him, Kevin? I love that John Oliver thing with the button and the banners and everything that come down and say, we got him. And we never quite got him. But do you think this time we got him?
I mean, I would like to think we do, but the dude is just made out of Teflon. And I don't get it. And I know we've talked about this. And he will continue, just like Adam Schiff said, he will continue to do this because I'm convinced that this man's brain has not evolved from the age of like 7 or 8. And he's the kid who touches the stove because, to find out that it's hot, still touches it again, or, steals money out of his mom's purse because she doesn't hold him accountable. Like he will continue to do these things until he's held accountable because he thinks he is above the law and goes along with the whole, I can shoot somebody on Fifth Avenue and I wouldn't lose any votes. He's a man child.
Yeah. Yeah. Does it make you scratch your head, Kevin, when you see the behavior that's being elevated by Donald Trump's supporters, certainly his most radical supporters, where all of the things that we were taught as children that constituted values, good character, decent behavior in a society and so on. These are all things that are being actively rejected by the example of Donald Trump, by obviously Donald Trump himself. And then the example he's setting for all these people who are following suit, who are behaving exactly like he does. I find it immensely disturbing and disillusioning when I see people who raised our generations, who taught us about these values and good character and so on, now behaving contrary to all those things that we were taught. Is that something that you've observed as well? Is that something that frustrates you? I mean, I know it is going back to our conversation about our family members and friends who might be Donald Trump supporters. That's one of the many things that kind of baffles me about all of this. I don't understand how they justify that behavior.
But Bob, these are like good Christian people, right? Like these are
right.
They love Jesus. Yeah, they probably wouldn't let him, came to their door, they'd probably be like, whoa, who is this brown guy? And that they see Jesus as buddy Christ from Dogma with the
exactly
two thumbs up.
But I mean, it's like the idea of being a sore loser. I was taught for many, many years, especially playing youth sports, soccer, baseball, et cetera, that you shouldn't be a sore loser. That's for bad people. Bad people whine and cry if they lose. It's like if you were going out for a role and they gave it to someone else, you were to go on Twitter and say, why is the system rigged against me personally? Whining right. and crying. I mean, that's one of the many things, but I think that's a big deal. I think the idea of being a sore loser is now widely accepted among, God only knows, 74 yeah. million people in this country plus.
And Trump has always been a sore loser.
Yeah.
Like whether it's golfing or real estate, like, doesn't he cheat in golfing? He does not like to lose.
Of course. Yeah. My ongoing assumption, Kevin, is never give him the benefit of the doubt. If you assume he's doing something bad, he probably is, like cheating in golf, for example. So yeah.
He's all like, didn't he say like years and years ago, there's a quote, if you say something over and over again, then people will believe it eventually. Oh, yeah. Like, I think he knows what he says is complete bullshit. Says it over and over again, then it has to be true. Why would the leader of the free world lie to you? Right.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, he uses the same, like, that's the way he got away with a lot of stuff in real estate. Like, you know, he didn't pay anybody. He went bankrupt so many times probably. And he took that mentality into the White House. And I don't know how I guess he got people to vote for him because, you know, the whole white grievance, like, oh, woe is me, mm-hmm. kind of, and he gets it. No, he doesn't get it. He's a rich billionaire. Why would you think he's not you.
Yeah.
He's not trying to help you.
Right. Like, and then I guess the follow-up question, Kevin, is do these people come back from that? Look, I understand conservatism. I understand embracing ideas like small government and low taxes and the basic core of conservative values, or at least the way they used to be. But now we've got obviously this movement towards tossing aside good character, tossing aside good behaviors. Okay, well, we can do whatever the hell we want. And if we're told not to, it's just a conspiracy to silence us, et cetera. Mm-hmm. We know the whole Trumpism thing. Do people come back from this obvious brainwashing once Trump is out of the way, or does Trumpism continue to manifest itself in new and awful ways moving forward?
Unfortunately, I feel like it's going to continue. I mean, whether I don't think he's going to run for president. I mean, he may not be alive. I mean, he's getting up there, let's be honest. Mm-hmm. and his diet is, well, something to think about. but I mean, look, I think we're going to be looking at Ron DeSantis or Josh Hawley or Ted Cruz, God, again, running for president. And I worry Ron DeSantis would be the worst of them all, because he's like, they call him like kind of a smart, like an intelligent Trump, I guess. He sounds like he's presidential. I don't think it's going to go away. I don't know if he's really talking about, does he really talk about voter fraud though? Or is he kind of staying away from all that because he wants to kind of try to get in the middle lane some way in 2024?
Are you talking about DeSantis?
DeSantis.
Oh, yeah.
Does he talk about voter fraud?
Oh, yeah. In fact, he formed a task force.
That's right.
Spending millions and millions of dollars. And they arrested, I think, 20 different, you know, quote unquote suspects who they insist committed voter fraud. And what it turns out to be is that these voters who are, I think mostly, if not all, ex-cons, did prison time, came out of prison, tried to register to vote and were actually accepted, received voter registration cards, their application was approved, et cetera. So they thought, well, I guess we can vote. And so they went in and voted. And then Ron DeSantis sends like the SWAT team against them with helicopters, this complete overreaction, this obvious pander to the red hats to say, hey, look at me. I'm cracking down on voter fraud in this state. And not even mentioning that probably half of those 20 people may have voted for Donald Trump. If you go, if you look at the split in Florida between Trump and Biden, it's very likely that that ratio played out among these 20 voters who Ron DeSantis claims voted illegally, when in fact it sounds more like entrapment to me. So Ron DeSantis is absolutely on the vanguard of playing up this series of big lie laws in Florida. And there's no one who more obviously panders to the culture war, panders to red hats, panders to Trump supporters than Ron DeSantis. And he's just this empty suit, nothing of a guy who barely won his race for governor the first time he ran. So now
Andrew Gillum almost beat him. Yes.
Yeah. So now he's the standard bearer. Now he's their guy that they're now hoping, well, if Trump doesn't run, it's going to be Ron DeSantis. And it just, it's staggering to me that they've reached the bottom of the bucket that quickly. Like, there's no one else. If it's not Trump, it's this guy.
I thought Nikki Fried was going to win the primary. I was a little surprised. Yeah. But using the way, I can just see in 2024, woke will go somewhere in his like saying for the presidency, like, I'm going to stop the woke agenda, or, you know, like, it's just whatever. What's wrong with being kind and generous to all people? I just don't get it.
Yeah,
I don't get it.
Yeah, they're demonizing the values of inclusion, enlightenment. And what they're really doing is, I believe every time they use the word woke, they're kind of invoking the N-word without saying the N-word. That's kind of the dog whistle they're using for their people. You know, the red hats hear woke and they immediately go to, oh, black people, Black Lives Matter. Okay, that's what we're screaming about here. Great.
That's the whole idea of, like, how do we get people to vote for us without actually helping these people? Oh, I know. We'll get them to hate other people. We'll pit people against each other.
Yeah.
You know, and I can just see the greedy bastards and at the oil companies and be like, oh, that's how we're going to get lower taxes. Well, let's do it.
Yeah.
Like that. I feel like that's what it all comes down to, making sure these big corporations pay as low a tax rate as possible so they can create more jobs. Right. Like the whole trickle down economics, because that totally works.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Even though that's been debunked like a gazillion times over, and then the culture war is used to get people who are, you know, middle class, struggling, working families to vote against their economic best interests. And the way that happens is through demonizing trans people, demonizing gay people, demonizing black people, demonizing women. And that's the trick. That's the trick that they don't see. Yeah.
They don't have any moral compass. I think they don't want to help pay for the country that we live in.
Are you ready for the Civil War? Have you gotten your uniform together and your firearms to? Oh my God. You saw the videos,
these people,
right?
People are insane. like 5-4. It looked like a dance recital or something. It was, All right, everybody.
It was amazing to look at that video and to see them rehearsing what looked like Napoleonic tactics, which is essentially what was used in the first half of the 19th century in warfare, when there was just like lead musket balls that would fire inaccurately, and you had to march right up to your enemy in a single column and start firing away like at point blank range in order to hit anybody. And of course, that was all thrown out during the Civil War, you know, 160 years ago. And they're rehearsing this.
Yeah. I think deep down they like this. I feel like they're like, man, we're actually okay. Cool. We've seen all these movies. We've seen Game of Thrones. You know, like, we can be part of that. Like, we can, you know, like, it's a game to them. Yeah. I really deep down believe, like, that they're like, oh man, it's like Dungeons and Dragons or something, or, the live role playing.
Yeah, I was gonna say live action role playing. Yeah, LARPers. Yes. They're LARPers.
Yes. Not to bash LARPers, because that looks like,
right.
I mean, I've seen it. It looks like a lot of fun, but these guys, it would not surprise me if some of them were LARPers.
Mm-hmm.
And just finding something to do. You know, some people join a basketball team or a bowling team. These guys, you know, they get together and they're like, hey, let's get ready for the end of the world, shall we? Awesome.
Oh,
okay,
God.
Cool.
Yeah, yeah. One of the things that's been floating around all over Twitter today is this photo of a bunch of top secret documents that were seized at Mar-a-Lago on August 8th. And they're spread out over the floor. They're obviously redacted, so you can't see any of the content of them. Are you as amused by the gaslighting and dumb guy excuses as I am with the Republicans
yes.
so far on this one?
Yeah. And I love how Trump said on his quote, social media thing, you're like, oh, they, you know, they're all spread out. They made it look like I left. Like, we got a lot we can bash Republicans on and Trump on.
Mm.
I don't believe that he, as dumb as he is, I don't think he just had them laying on the ground like that. I'm not that stupid.
No, of course
obviously
not.
They took them out of the box, which is, I would assume that they were in that box that's on the right-hand side of the screen, which doesn't look like a safe or anything to me. It looks like a box you put folders in, which is, of course, where you would put classified documents that nobody is allowed to see. Makes perfect sense to put them with Time Magazine. Sure. Okay,
yeah,
cool.
Yeah.
Is that where that's where they're getting at, right? That's where they got them from that box, I would assume.
Yeah, I don't know whether they came from that box or not, but it was obvious that Donald Trump had them. So they took them out like any crime scene photo. Laid them all down. These are the documents that we seized. Here they are. And Donald Trump is trying to get his poorly educated followers to believe that the FBI was trying to say that he did that he spread them. It's just, you know what it screams out to me, Kevin? It just screams out that they've got nothing. They've got no defense. They're just throwing anything against the wall, hoping it sticks with a few people here and there. But ultimately, it feels like they're trapped. It feels like they're stuck, that Donald Trump can't quite wiggle out of this, that he won't be able to. Goes back to what we were saying before. We got him. I think we got him on this one. I'm pretty sure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You think he's going to be indicted?
Absolutely. It's just a matter of timing.
I just don't see how you can't indict him unless you're just worried that there's going to be, like Lindsey Graham said, but that's not the DOJ's place to work, you know.
Yeah.
They didn't have any problem, you know, saying that they were going to investigate Hillary Clinton,
right?
You know, at the last minute of the election, probably because, you know, our side is not a scary mob.
Yeah, and I've been thinking about the timing of a potential indictment. It's possible that everything we're seeing as far as the search and seizure at Mar-a-Lago and the fallout from that is not the end-all be-all of what Donald Trump could be charged with in this investigation. What I'm getting at is that maybe, of course, I don't know. This is all conjecture. This is all theorizing. But maybe this is on the path to a larger set of charges where they're maybe not necessarily examining, and obviously it's indictable, but maybe the centerpiece of this isn't just the documents that were handed over in the 15 boxes back in January, or the additional documents they got in June, or the documents they got in August, that it's something else. Like, this is a stepping stone to a larger set of indictable offenses. And if that's the case, I completely understand having to take whatever time is required to get to that series of charges being handed down. So I don't know that we should necessarily be trying to hurry them up, even though time is of the essence, because if a Republican gets elected in 2024, the first thing they're going to do is to pardon Donald Trump. So there is a time consideration here, but I think as far as the scope of this investigation, the scope of what this grand jury is doing, may lead us well beyond Espionage Act, well beyond the obstruction of justice charges that are already on the table. There may be something more than that. I don't know where you land on this, but that's my theory.
Well, I mean, I think Tom Hartman, you know, said that there's a good chance. I mean, for one, like, why does he have those documents in the first place? Like, you just have to ask yourself.
Yeah.
I mean, and
what do you
how
think?
Did Jared Kushner make $2 billion? I don't even know how that works. Like, do you take him across the country, you know, to Russia or whatever, and you show, hey, here you go, Putin. You want to take a look at what, you know, and take a picture, and then I'll take him back.
Yeah.
Like, I don't even know how that works.
Yeah, that's a really good question. Like, how would he go about selling? What's his process for selling a top secret document to Saudi Arabia or something like that?
I mean, I got to think that that's a legitimate possibility. Like, that's a possibility, right? I mean,
sure.
It's just, like, but I don't even know how you would go about doing that. but if they are able to prove somehow that he did that, like that's really, really fucking bad. Like, that's damning stuff. That's prison for life, I would say.
Oh God. Yeah. 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 If he was selling
that,
right. If he was selling top secret, especially human intelligence to Russia or Saudi Arabia or whoever, if he was just showing it to a guest at Mar-a-Lago, even something like that, we're talking about serious damage to national security, on top of the fact that it endangers the lives of our spies, our military personnel who are overseas. Obviously, we have seen now at least two different people, suspicious people, worming their way into Mar-a-Lago. Like, there's this Ukrainian-speaking woman who made her way into Mar-a-Lago, was playing golf with Lindsey Graham and Donald Trump, had her photo taken with them.
Oh my God, who knows
who they're communicating with? So it doesn't even have to be. And obviously, we know Donald Trump's transactional. Everything he does is a quid pro quo. I'll give you this if you give me that. That's his whole thing. But at the same time, he's a dumb guy who likes to show off. And so he's going to inadvertently allow, just by the very nature of these documents being everywhere, all over the place at Mar-a-Lago, it's entirely possible that whether it's maintenance staff or housekeeping staff caught a glimpse of one of these things. Certainly his attorneys, if his legal representatives looked at these, they don't have security clearance to look at these things.
No.
So it's a complete clusterfuck from top to bottom. We don't know. And that's why I think there's maybe another layer to this. And that's where maybe the grand jury is leading ultimately.
But the real important thing, Bob, is what is on Hunter Biden's laptop. Like, that's the most important thing.
And there is no laptop. That. Yeah, there is.
Exactly, right? We,
you know what? We've got pictures of the top secret documents on the floor of Mar-a-Lago. What we don't have anywhere ever is a picture of Hunter Biden's laptop. Why? Because there is no laptop. We're talking about, at the very least, a hard drive. And this is next level madness. The same goes with Hillary Clinton's email server.
Yeah.
Turns out there were only three documents on Hillary Clinton's email server that were even hinted at being confidential. The markings on them are inconclusive as far as their classification status, and they were all handed over. Hillary Clinton handed over the server to the FBI. They retrieved the documents. Game over. I mean, you could say that, all right, this was kind of irresponsible to have a homebrew server and have staffers sending you things onto this email server. But this is nowhere, anywhere in the same
year.
No, absolutely not. You're absolutely right on that. There's no comparison whatsoever. But it's all whataboutism, isn't it?
Always. Always with the right. Yes.
Okay, back with more Kevin Johnson right after this.
Bob Seska plays more music.
So, apart from baseball, what are you watching these days?
Oh, yeah. Do you see my baseball?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, of course. I follow you on Twitter, Kevin. Of course I see your baseball tweets. Yeah, yeah. Anything else you're watching on TV or any films you've seen lately that blew your mind, et cetera?
I just started watching The Patient on Hulu with Steve Carell and I think Donald Gleason. It just came out yesterday. And he's like, Donald Gleason is like a serial killer, but he's trying to stop. So he kidnaps Steve Carell, his therapist, and brings him to like this house. and he wants him to stop him from killing people.
Mm-hmm.
So he's, you know, and that was an that's an interesting show. House of the Dragon, on HBO, the Game of Thrones prequel just started. That's a really cool show.
I stirred up some controversy on my show because I watched, I watched and for the most part loved Game of Thrones. I got to the point where I couldn't endure the storytelling sucker punches from that show anymore, where, you know, you get to like a character and you root for that character and suddenly they're brutally killed in some way.
Oh,
like when that little girl is burned at the stake, I was like, oh, holy shit. Are you fucking kidding me?
I remember that. Yes.
Yeah. That and the whole Reek situation where he's being tortured relentlessly throughout the season, between those two things, I was like, oh, fuck this show. But I couldn't stop. it's a testament to the quality of the show. I couldn't stop watching the show. But when it comes to House of the Dragon, I'm like, well, okay, if you're into that, great. I can't subject myself to it anymore. I can't deal with it.
And
It's
like Succession. Like, it's more like Succession than Game of Thrones. It's
right.
It's because they're battling each other. Like the house, the Targaryens are fighting with each other. So mm-hmm. It's very Succession-like.
Yeah, yeah. And I don't know if you've seen, and I've been recommending this to anyone who's looking for something to watch, The White Lotus on HBO.
Oh. I loved it.
We've watched it a couple of times so far, and it gets better and better and better with every watching. It's just such an unusual and strange. I mean, Mike White has such an interesting perspective on things. It's very quirky, very offbeat, which is wonderful as well. And so, I strongly recommend The White Lotus. Are you going to go to the Emmys this year?
Me personally, probably not. They only, like, if you get nominated, and yes, the show is nominated, but like, I think it's only individuals nominated get an invite, but I'll definitely be watching from my couch. And I don't know. I mean, it's tough competition, obviously, you know, I think Ozark has a chance. And then the SAG Awards next year, I have a good feeling that we'll be nominated, which means I'll get to actually go to the SAG Awards,
mm-hmm.
which would be really cool. And then I can meet my future ex-wife, if she wasn't already married, Jessica Chastain. But then also, like there's going to be some tough competition next year as well. I like our chances, but Better Call Saul is also
up,
and that show's phenomenal.
What'd you think of the finale?
I loved it. I thought that was great. The whole idea of like the Orson Welles time machine, 1984?
Oh yeah. Yeah. They were asking about, the time machine. If you had a time machine, you could go back in time and correct something that you did in your life, would you do it? I love that. And that he was asking essentially three ghosts, which kind of had a Dickensian aspect to it. Interacted with three people who were dead at that point. I found that utterly fascinating. Yeah. And you know what? I found a little bit of a parallel between your character from Ozark and Jimmy McGill, where ultimately in the end, they're redeemed. Where, you know, you figure, oh shit, they're really on the wrong path here. But ultimately, it turns out well. For both Sam and Jimmy at the end of these two series, which are, again, they're running parallel with each other as these groundbreaking, extraordinarily popular series. And so it's not that difficult to see the comparisons between the two as far as, you know, where your character ended up and where Jimmy McGill ended up. So, it was an interesting crossover.
I just wonder, because I felt like Jimmy thought he was going to be able to get away with this, like, throughout the episode,
mm-hmm.
and he wanted Kim there. Was it like a last minute kind of thing? He looked out, he sees her in the back, and he's like, okay, I've gone too far with this. I can't do this. And then that was his moment where he decided to basically throw himself under the bus and take it all?
That's a good question.
I wonder.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I was thinking
he could have easily, you know, at the he could have easily just taken the punishment, you know, but he went he was so good at, you know, like leniency, like he was able to get a better sentence and everything. But was all that just a lead up just to get Kim to come to the courtroom so he could, you know, at the last minute do the right thing? Like, I just.
Yeah, I think I know exactly where you're getting at. I think it was all part of the plan. I think that was something that he devised while he was on the plane traveling from Omaha back to Albuquerque to be put on trial. I think when he heard that Kim was in danger of a civil lawsuit where her life would have been destroyed, I think at that point, that's when he formulated this plan. And there was that misdirect where we thought he was going to throw Kim under the bus. What I believe what happened in that courtroom is that Jimmy finally killed Saul Goodman. Despite what happened in the bus on the way to this awful prison he went on. But ultimately, I believe that Saul Goodman died in that courtroom to be replaced by Jimmy McGill. It was a rebirth, in a sense. Another parallel with Sam, where he was reborn in baptism. So I felt like these are two characters that could have gone horribly awry in the end and ended up being redeemed in the end. So there's your connection, Kevin, to to Better Call Saul.
Yeah. You hear that, producers? You did a Better Call Saul show. Let's do a Better Call Sam show. Come on, guys. Let's do it.
Yeah. Let's have the Sam spinoff. We need the Sam spinoff. I think that's a great idea. You need to call your agent immediately to propose that. So one last thing here, Kevin. It looks like you're climbing aboard the convention circuit. Where are you appearing? You're going to do, what is it, some sort of spooktacular kind of thing?
Yeah, I just signed with a personal personal appearance agent. I had one of those. And
yeah,
I was like, I heard you can, you know, you can make some good money doing that. You can meet more fans. So yeah, he got me one in Florida. December 17th and the 18th, I think. It's on my Instagram page. But yeah, I'm looking forward to it. I think it's mainly for Stranger Things, but there's a lot of Ozark fans out there. So I'm sure I get recognized all the time when I'm out and about. So I'm sure people will recognize me for Ozark as well there.
Yeah, and I heard, at least it was fictionalized on Schitt's Creek. Apparently, they're really into taking pictures of your feet at these things. And I'm not sure if that's a real thing, but that's what they did on Schitt's Creek.
I'm going to find out, yeah. I guess.
So make sure you're wearing clean socks. That's all I have to say, Kevin. Be real.
Yeah, I'll just have I'll have some peanut butter beside me. I'll be like, hey, does anybody want to put peanut butter on my toes and take a picture? You know, just like the show.
Perfect. All right. Well, where can people find you on social media, Kevin?
On Twitter, it'd be Kevin_L_Johnson.
Ah, see, it makes me feel better about having an underscore in my Twitter handle, too.
Yeah. Kevin L. Johnson was already taken, so I had to put those there. For Instagram, it's going to be the Kevin L. Johnson. I had, because somebody already had Kevin L. Johnson, I had to put the in the front.
See, we're like social media brothers, Kevin, because I had to put the in front of my name because someone had taken my name on Instagram. So, well, thank you so much, my friend. It was great talking to you, and good luck. Good luck on the spooktacular.
Bud.
All right, take it easy, my friend.
All right, later.
Bye-bye.